there's a couple mindsets, right? You can either have this victim mindset, like I'm a victim of everything, you know, like I think that there's a lot of girls that maybe do that when they find themselves pregnant, but it's like, I kind of contributed to this getting myself here. And so it's like constantly looking back and saying, I have a choice. Like I can either choose to be a victim or I can choose to be a victor.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best lives. We are presented by Minky Couture. I'm Jenny Taylor.
And I'm Michelle Scharf. Wrap yourself in pure bliss with Minky Couture's premium fabrics and stylish designs. A Minky Couture blanket makes the perfect gift for any occasion, from birthdays to holidays and even baby showers.
Which we were just talking about offline.
Yeah.
Love those Minkies.
You don't have to take my word for it or our word for it. Minky Couture customers rave about the comfort and quality of Minky Couture blankets.
6 locations in Utah, or find them online, minkycouture.com. We're so grateful to be presented by them.
Yes. Today, Jenny, we have in our studio two people that I know, and I've known Heather Andrews for a long time. I don't know. It's been a long time. What? More than 12-ish years now.
Yeah.
And we've traveled together. We've done fun things together. We've crossed political events together. We've lobbied together, or lobbied separately, but at different, at similar events, and a lot of fun things. But you have a really great story. But before we get into it, I also want to acknowledge that your daughter is here in studio with us today, Kiara Williamson. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I stumbled onto your story right as you were kind of in the middle of it, or at the beginning parts of it, and have kind of followed you, and then recently stumbled onto your Instagram account where I thought, this is a perfect story and I want to have the story on. So today's story is going to be a two-part series, one focusing the first part on your story, Heather, and then how that kind of transpired and how your daughter's story actually intertwined with your own story. So this is about adoption, closed adoption, open adoption, the differences, and what it's been in your life. And so thank you for coming on and being so open to share your story.
You're welcome. Yeah.
So how did your story begin?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yeah, it does take a little bit of vulnerability to kind of talk about this topic. As you can imagine, it's not easy to talk about, especially being raised in a very Mormon family, LDS family, where you know, you were taught from a very young age, like premarital sex is wrong. You don't do that. And so there was a lot of,
and you were
shame.
Active.
Yeah. I was very active in the church. I did not. Yeah. I didn't want to. I had many opportunities before, you know, when I was younger with boyfriends and whatever. I lived outside of Utah, actually. I grew up in the mission field, as you would say, Maine and then Kentucky. And so, and then came out west to go to college. So it was actually like in college that it kind of all started, essentially. I went to Ricks College because my dad had been president of Ricks College and my mom had gone to, LDS College and gone to Ricks, and they both had a great
experience.
Okay, so
for those listening that might not know, Ricks College is now known as BYU Idaho. Yes. So it's a church-owned school. So you are in the trenches of the Latter-day Saint culture.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And so it was supposed to be this great experience. Well, I don't know how many of you have been to Rexburg, Idaho, but it isn't quite as amazing as one would expect. Yes, very windy, very cold, very brutal winters. And when you don't have a car.
And pretty rural.
Yeah.
Like, very at least rural. Back then.
Oh, especially 20 years ago. Taco Bell. Yeah.
Like, okay, people.
How do you survive?
No Taco Bell.
I love dividing rural areas by the fast food. But yeah, how do you go to college and not have a Taco Bell?
Right.
There,
we had a drive to Idaho Falls, which was like almost 25 minutes away to get to Taco Bell.
And so that's you guys were pulling car money.
Right.
Who's going to drive
who's
this
driving?
Time?
Yes. Agreed.
And the car would be full.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I had no car and I was living an off campus. I wasn't living in the dorms, which I've heard, you know, maybe would have been better had I lived in the dorms. It kind of is, you know, you're able to be closer to campus and kind of have some greater. And in fact, my first experience with roommates was having a girl who had multiple personality disorder. Oh, and wow. One of her personalities was a kleptomaniac. And so she stole things from me, like my favorite pair of jeans that all of a sudden went missing one day and couldn't find them anywhere.
You're just like, welcome to adulthood. Right. This sounds pretty awesome. Right. It's what everybody dreams of when they go away to college.
Right. And yeah. I didn't have friends, you know, there. Yeah. I had some like extended family, or my dad's kind of adopted family who was around the area that I knew, but there was no one really I was friends with. And so it was like being alone in this like new environment and new place and kind of lost. And I, not only that, but it was like I'd graduated high school and I got approved to, or I got into the summer semester. So it was like I had 2 weeks after I graduated
high school.
Barely
out of high school.
Yeah. And then just jumped right into college. Which I don't highly recommend anyone ever do. Right. Like, take some time, like, figure out maybe, like, what you want to do. And
yeah, and really not only that, through. It's summer semester, so it's not busy.
It's not the same.
It's not the full.
There's not as much campus life and some of those activities and things, especially they gear August and back to school around the freshmen and getting you welcomed in, but you're showing up in May or June.
Right. Yeah, it was hard that way, and the classes are actually, compacted. So it's a lot harder because they have to put the whole course into a quicker. So it was a lot harder. So that was like kind of context around it. And I had met this guy earlier when I had gone and spent a summer in Idaho sorting potatoes. My parents were a little worried about me and kind of my wild streak when I was a teenager. And so they had me go to Idaho to spend some time with.
Sounds like a Hallmark movie,
right? Adopted my dad's adopted family, who owns like they have a potato farm.
Of course
and,
they do.
Yes, right. And so then, and they have a sorting facility, and so it was like, you know, I just ended up sorting potatoes for a whole summer and exploring, you know, around with one of a girl that was my age. Her name was Sarah Ball. She was awesome, and we had a great time. She was dating a guy, and his best friend really liked me and was into me. But I was like, oh, he's like young and immature. I just didn't want anything to do with him. It was fun to hang out, but it wasn't like I had a romantic interest. But when I went back to college, and we got together again, I met him. He was playing football. He was in his senior year, and he'd matured. And there was all of a sudden this like new attraction. Like, I'm like, oh, he looks pretty good. He's like grown a little bit and he's playing football.
He moved from boy to kind of man.
Right.
But we're still talking about a high school senior, right?
Yeah. It's a high school senior.
I got it.
Yeah. Yes. So,
although you're just barely not a high school senior.
No, you're right. Everybody's so young here. Everybody.
Yes. Yeah. So there was just a little bit of romance that kind of started that way. You know, we got to know each other. We started actually just hanging out as friends and kind of blossomed into something, you know, more. And I really liked his family. His family kind of adopted me. They lived in a great, you know, great area. They knew I was kind of alone at Ricks College. So they'd invite me over for family dinners and like just to spend some time. And they were awesome. And I should have kind of seen the red flag, though, because he treated his mom horribly.
Oh, and that is a good indicator.
Right.
Yeah.
And I didn't know at the time.
Also, you're young.
And let's go back to that.
It's easy to look back and go, you know, I never did like the way he treated his mom. And to be able to with adult eyes and maturity, to go, oh, yeah, that was a red flag. I just missed it.
Yeah. So, So then, obviously, like, ended up having sex one time and just started experiencing like all these new sensations in my body. And it happened to be like, this was in the fall too, like kind of later on, like September, October time. Well, maybe it was like, probably October. And we were going to go to San Diego as a family for, you know, go visit my grandfather and my uncle who lives out
in
San Diego.
She looked over and said, you know. Because I've been to her uncle's house. Uncle Mark is amazing, and I want to go back. I think about him all the time.
Yeah, so we would go a lot of times to San Diego because it was nice to get away for, you know, for Christmas and go to a warmer climate and visit family. And so I remember, when we were there on this family, you know, Christmas vacation, and I was away from school and experiencing kind of these body changes, like going and looking in a bookstore. We were in a mall and we were in a bookstore and grabbing the book, you know, What to Expect When You're Expecting, and just kind of scanning through like some of the signs that you, you know, here's what you may be experiencing if you are pregnant. And I'm like, check, check. Oh, no. And I'm like, oh no. So then I, you know, quickly buy a, and secretly buy a pregnancy test and take that. And yeah, and then I discover it's positive, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like sinking feeling in the stomach. Like, what am I gonna do? Like, I was not expecting this. This is not good.
And not only is it an unexpected pregnancy, but it's layered in now shame. Yes.
How am I
guilt, gonna, and now I'm gonna have to own my actions completely.
So if I can ask, I'm curious, what do you do next? Do you talk to him, the boyfriend? Do you talk to your parents, your family, your best friend? Like, walk through that. That's a lot of layers.
Oh, it was, yeah. So the first thing I did was, I kind of locked myself in the bathroom and called him, called my boyfriend at the time, and just said...
And you were still seeing each other?
Yes. Well, I thought we were.
Oh.
I was on Christmas vacation with family, but yeah. So I call him and I say, hey, you know, here's the situation. I don't know what to do. Like, I just learned I'm pregnant, and, you know, I know this is shocking probably to you. You know, I'm sure you weren't expecting it. I don't know what to, you know, tell him how,
what
are we going to do? And his response was essentially, and I just remember it was devastating. He was just like, I don't really want to be with you long term. I wasn't planning on this at all. Like, you're not the one I want to be with. I've already I met this exchange student and we've clicked and we've started hitting it off and started doing things together. And it just, that was just horrific to hear, like, basically, I don't want you anymore. Like, I'm done with you. Like,
Did he deal with it? Did he seem to take like any accountability? Like, he's part of this pregnancy?
Oh, not really. Awful. None.
Just,
no.
Hey, your problem. He can walk away from it. You can't.
Yeah. He was just kind of like, like, well, I'm sorry, but you know,
but
like,
not my problem.
Yeah. So then it was, okay, I've got to tell mom and dad, this is going to be fun, you know? And I just remember, you know, having the conversation. My mom and I remember it really differently, which is interesting. Mm. I remember having it like right after. I remember telling my mom first because I just figured my dad and I have a close relationship, but it's different. Like, I feel like I can tell my mom stuff and I know what she's going to probably do, but at least... we have a kind of a deeper emotional connection that way. So I shared with her and she was just like, oh boy, you better talk to your dad. Like, this is, I don't know how to handle this yet. Just give me some time to process all this, but go, you know, make sure you tell your dad. I think your dad needs to know. So I remember like, they have my grandpa has like a kind of a pool house, a pool room kind of area where it was kind of separate from the main house. And so, you know, I remember my dad and I don't know if I pulled him aside and asked him to come out or if I said I need to have a private conversation. But I remember being out there very specifically and having this conversation and telling my dad and just having this sinking feeling because he is the last person I really wanted to disappoint. You know, I love my dad and he's kind of always been like the rock. And like, I knew it would probably crush him and it would be hard for him. And so having that conversation was difficult. But I remember telling him, and I'll never forget what he said. And I just told him, why didn't you tell me this like a few years earlier? I would have been great. But he said, Heather, he's like, you know, guys use love to get sex and girls use sex to get love. And I just thought, brilliant, but so he's like, I go to that even now though, like even like looking back at some of the, you know, experiences I even had later in life, like going, I kind of wish I would have let that sunk in a little bit more, you know, because I do feel like that's the case. You know, I think guys do, they tell you they love you. Like, there was no shortage. I thought we were like going to be together forever. Like, no joke. Mm. Like, we were best friends. We not only like were we romantically involved, but I really felt like we had that foundation of we just hung out all the time and mm-hmm. it was fun. Like, we enjoyed the same things. Like, I really felt connected on a deeper level than just like this romantic fling thing, mm-hmm. you know?
But he'd already moved on to whoever yeah. was next.
And obviously I was apparently like oblivious to the fact that he really didn't feel the same way. Like, it wasn't that strong for him, but it didn't appear that way to me at all. So yeah, it was pretty telling, like, okay, well, maybe that's all he wanted. True. But it just felt so much more real to me. And it was really devastating. But yeah, so at that
so
point.
What year is this?
This is like 1996, 97.
Okay, so mm-hmm. what do you do next? You decide to keep the baby and to carry the baby to term, but to give the baby to adoption. Was that like an immediate decision? Was that no. long agony? Like, walk us through that. Yeah. That's got to be a lot.
Yeah. So obviously we went back to, because my parents were like, we don't know what to do. We'll figure it out. But they went back to Kentucky. I went back to
school,
Rick's College. And I was in student housing. And so it was like, I felt like as a good Mormon, an LDS girl, I needed to go talk to the bishop and have a conversation. And, you know, we all know those are difficult to have.
I love how accountable you are at yeah. this age.
To yeah. own up to it, right.
Which really, I mean, as you tell us this story, I've known you for a long time, and this is your heart. You are accountable. You'll be honest and take accountability for your actions. Oh. And hearing this story, it's like, well, of course you did.
Mm. Mm. Thank you. So, yeah, I did. I talked to the bishop, and, you know, they were like, you can't live in student housing anymore, so you're going to have to figure out something else. And my mom called me, too, and she was like, she had made a call to LDS Family Services and talked to one person, and they recommended you don't let her come home. She got herself into this and she needs to figure it out on her own.
Like, that was their counsel.
Their counsel was, you are not responsible for her actions. Like, she needs to suffer the consequences on a very real level. And do not bring her home. Do not allow her to, like, do not rescue her from this situation. She needs to figure this out on her own. And so then it was just like, you know, I couldn't live in student housing.
You can't go
I had
home.
No idea what I was going to do. Couldn't go home. I was not allowed to. And I was the oldest of seven children. And so there were six younger siblings. So I did understand, like, I know my parents didn't want me influencing them or seeing, you know, like, I'm sure a lot of them didn't even know this, like, my situation or what happened till they were like in their 20s.
Because they were so young.
Yeah. And they, yeah. well, and my parents just never shielded. Told them. Hmm. Yeah. And they, and yeah. I was told not to tell or anything, you know, keep it a secret. So,
well, that's a whole nother show we could do on shame.
Right.
And
right.
Well, yeah. you hear stories right. of girls who got pregnant, you know, decades ago, and they get shipped off to Aunt Marla's house in right. South Carolina to carry the pregnancy with yeah. nobody knows, yeah. but you were already shipped off.
Yeah. So, I mean, I found a couple jobs, like doing housekeeping for, you know, hotels, and I worked.
And the boyfriend's
working.
Nowhere.
No.
At this, like, point, gone.
No, he wasn't anywhere. His parents were being supportive, but, like, not. I mean, I don't even remember really communicating with them at that time. But I just remember, yeah, having to work hard. And then I found, like, I started working with LDS Family Services that was in the area, and they found this kind of, like, family who was going to allow me to stay with them. But it was also like this really awkward situation where they kind of felt like I was now their slave or like housekeeper and like scrub the basement floors. Like, we want you to do this and do that. And like, they provided a space to live. But for me, it just ingrained this more, like you said, like more shame, more guilt. Like, I felt like I was the worst person in the world. Like, I literally felt like I was deserving of nothing good. Like,
meanwhile, your body's going through yeah. all kinds of changes and hormones. And I mean, pregnancy under great circumstances is yeah. so emotionally difficult.
Yeah.
And physically hard.
Both. Yeah. Well, I was throwing up.
I was just
going to
say,
yeah.
you know, what about your cleaning houses? This is your first pregnancy.
Yeah. Oh, morning sickness was awful. It was awful.
Well, and you're so young. And I mean, you're still yeah. a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah, and the doctor was prescribing, you know, the giant pills that you take, the prenatals, and that, you know, that make it worse. If you're not eating regularly and you're taking a prenatal, you're just like, oh, like you're sick almost all day.
Yeah. So I'm always curious on the finances of things. How are you paying for this medical care for this baby when your unmarried boyfriend's not around? You're employed, but not by like a great company with insurance.
Yeah, no, I didn't even go in. I hadn't even gone to a doctor at this point. I didn't even go because I wasn't told that that was something you need to. Yeah,
wow.
I didn't have anyone there. So it was just like trying to figure out things on my own. Eventually, I do remember my mom like giving me the option. Like she had a close friend group in Maine, and one of them was Natalie and Tim. And I remember growing up with some of their girls and things like that and their family. And they had moved to Chicago. And so she presented this option, like they're willing to let you come stay with them. Maybe you could look into something like an internship or doing something there, but they're willing to have you. And I just thought, you know what? It's someone I've known from the past. It's better than my current experience. Like, maybe I'll just try that. And I was able to find, like, I really wanted to kind of get into hospitality management. So I found a good summer experience to where I could do an internship in one of the hotels there that was doing some of the, So went out there.
Yeah, so how many months along are you at this point?
That's a good question.
Fall to summer.
I wish I kept better track of that, but I would think it was a few months after. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe four or 5 months.
Yeah.
Four months.
So you're like halfway through.
So you're still pregnant, maybe obviously pregnant.
Yes.
Or starting to look
Chicago.
Pregnant.
Actually, like it was weird because I think it's so funny. Like even when I was like, and I think this happens with girls, and I think Kiara can probably talk about her experience too. You don't show. Like when you're in shame and when you're like not wanting to show, it's amazing what the body can do. Mm. I physically did not. I actually lost weight. Yeah. Oh. I lost weight.
Which can't be good for you or the baby.
No. Yeah. I didn't gain weight. I was really healthy. I swam a lot and worked out and walked and stuff. I love swimming. That was kind of my go-to and my whole life. I was a great swimmer. So that's how I stayed in, you know, try to stay in shape. But yeah, you didn't get the baby bump. It's almost like, I think women that are happy to be pregnant and like, because I experienced that obviously later with my kids. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it's like you don't want to. And there's so much shame with that comes with it. It's almost like your body responds in kind. And I didn't. I wasn't like showing.
So if you're not physically showing, were you just quiet about it at school? Like you're still going to classes before you left for the summer?
I got, before I got kicked out or whatever. Yeah, and told like you can't be here anymore. Like you're not allowed to be in the school. You can't be in the housing. Yeah. Yeah, I did. I didn't really. Yeah. I told like maybe one or two people that I felt like safe
closer
talking to, but it was
so
a pretty
dark time.
So where
along the line did you begin to look at the option of adoption?
I would say at the beginning it was always there because my family was very much pushing that. I mean, I had a best friend in high school. I'd gone through her having an abortion. Mm. I saw her go through that. I personally lived it with her. After that, it was never on the table for me, like ever. I mean, I told myself I will never put myself through this, watching her go through it.
Seeing how difficult it was.
Oh, it wrecked her. Like it wrecked her in so many ways. I didn't recognize the person she was after. And I don't think she did for a long time. I don't think she found herself and her footing. So I just learned, okay, like that's not an option. So it's either I'm carrying this baby full term and I'm going to place it for adoption, or I'm just going to, I'll have to keep it. So like, I'll look at all the options. So I was always, I mean, I was working with LDS Family Services. They were kind of providing me with different options. In Chicago, what they do is they like you to kind of look through family bios to kind of get an idea. Okay. Yeah. You know, here's couples that are interested in adopting. And so they would provide me with information on these couples and I could read them.
And see
I
if
did.
One felt like a good fit.
Yes. And I went through hundreds of them in Chicago when I was there. And I just never felt, you know, that feeling like this is right.
Yeah.
This is the one.
This is the family for
this
the
is
baby.
It. Yeah. And nothing felt right. And so it was really hard because I was torn all the time. Like, I don't think I can handle raising a child right now. And because I don't really have anything. Yeah. But I also like don't feel good about anyone that is being presented to me. So, yeah, I I had a best friend that was back in Utah. She was doing nannying for her brother, and she invited me to come out for a little bit and just kind of visit and get a break from Chicago. And I just was like, jumped at it. I was like, this is great. I need a friend. I need something.
I need a change.
Yeah. So I went out there and visited, and I was getting to be the time where I needed to kind of go back to Chicago. And because I'd left, you know, the majority of my stuff there, but I just felt like I needed to stay in Utah for some reason. Like there was something that was like, you need to be here and you need to stay here and figure out some way to stay here. But I couldn't understand why. And I just remember having the most, like, I don't know if you've ever had a breakdown, like a almost like anxiety attack, panic attack. But it was like my body, everything in me knew I needed to figure out how to be in Utah and stay in Utah. So I just broke down. Like I've never cried more or longer in my entire life, but I didn't know how to do it. But I knew I needed to. And so it was just like this moment of complete despair. I felt just so like alone and then just so helpless. And I remember having a conversation with my mom. I remember going, they obviously, my friend was like, oh my gosh, we got to do something. So they took me into like a doctor who, you know, a mental health doctor. And they, you know, I explained the situation and they're like, you need to have some conversations like with your family and explain the situation. Maybe someone can help. So I remember calling my mom and telling her what was going on. And she's like, you know, and I'm like, reminded me that I do have family here. Her extended family was in Utah. And I just said, I know that there's probably a lot of shame around this for you, but I really feel like I need to be here. So I'm likely going to reach out and see if they're willing to help me in any way. And my cousin Lucy, who we were closest in age to, I reached out to her and she was living in Lehigh at the time. And she was like, yes, come over. I'm happy to have you. Like,
did she know before that call that you were expecting?
No.
Or this, everything was very quiet.
Everything
very
was, oh, 100%. Okay. My great uncle, my mom's uncle, was a general authority in the church. And so, as you can imagine, she didn't really want it shared widely and broadly that any, you know, any of this was happening and that, you know, yeah. So, and this was, Lucy was the general authority's daughter, one of his youngest daughter. And so I went and stayed with her for a little bit. She ended up calling her parents, and my Aunt Connie and Uncle Hartman came and got me, and they had me stay with them. And this was the general authority and his wife. And I have never been treated better. Like she was like, for the first time, I felt like I was a person who had feelings and emotions that were like,
and not just people, a giant walking mistake.
Yes. Like she was like, how are you feeling? Like no one had asked me that really, you know, like what's going, you know, like, how can I help you? Like she just started serving me. And I was just like, I couldn't process it because I was on like survival mode for so long that it felt so
foreign. Everyone else was telling you, you're on your own. We can't help you. You did
we
this
can't
to yourself.
Rescue you. Right.
Yeah.
And like, felt like a lot of that was coming from kind of your church, your support system that should have been there.
Right.
And then lo and behold, you end up in a general authority's home and they're like, we're here to serve you.
Yeah. And it was pretty amazing. Like she got me into LDS Family Services and we went through again more family bios. That's how I found the family that I ended up choosing was through that experience. And again, it kind of solidified the fact that I knew like deep down there was something that said, you've got to stay in Utah. And it was for a reason because the family or the couple that I chose, I can't explain how it happens, but it's like the most incredibly, amazingly peaceful, profoundly like.
You just knew.
Yeah. It's just there. You just know in your heart, your soul, everything. You just know this is the couple. Like, and I felt like it was right. Like I was the means to get this child to this couple.
Family.
And I felt actually more healed and more like peace than I had ever felt in for the, you know, last eight months.
The whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So what year was this? This is a long time ago.
This was, he was born in 1997. Yeah.
But you never met them. So you reviewed their packet, felt really good about them to be the family of this baby. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then you deliver the baby and somebody else takes him to them and you.
I actually,
What's that process like?
I did get to meet them one time before, or it was either after the placement happened or before, I can't remember. But I did get to sit down and have a face-to-face to meet with them. But it was one time and it was for a pretty short amount of time. And then from then on, it was like you could write and you could correspond, but like they could send me pictures, but heads had to be cut out. Like heads had to be cut out of the pictures. The baby's head didn't, but theirs. Like if they had family members were in the picture, they had to cut them out. I couldn't know their address. I couldn't know where they lived. I couldn't know their last names.
So
I couldn't know their first names.
Correspondents go through LDS Social Services.
Yes.
So they were the mediating kind of broker in this whole thing.
Yeah.
And it only lasts for a certain amount of time, right?
Or
dated a guy in high school. His little sister was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember very similar to that where they could correspond, but I think it was up to maybe age two at that time. It would have been right around the same.
Yep.
Same time frame, late 90s.
Yeah, so then it was like all like on faith that things were going to work out, like he was going to be taken care of, like he was, it was a full faith and trust kind of experience. But yeah, it's like, you know, all of us have had children in this, and you know what it's like, I mean, to have a child. Like it's such a beautiful, spiritual, like amazing experience. And yeah, like to have to place or to have to like walk down this long hallway, you know, and say goodbye forever, you know, for potentially ever was, absolutely the hardest thing I've ever had to do.
Oh my gosh, it just makes me cry.
As a doula, I supported a few families that had adopted babies and some situations where they were the adopted parents and they hired me to help them learn how to take care of a baby postpartum. But they were the receiving parents.
Not the birth mother.
So I've been on both sides of this.
Wow.
And birth in itself, going back to what you said, it's such a spiritual experience. I always likened it to, well, in LDS terms, I would say you're standing at the threshold where the veil opens and separates. And God and life is being created here in that moment on earth, and it is a moment of creation, of true creation, and it is the most sacred and hallowed experience. But it's also a death because the woman emerges anew. Like she's also, and with every birth she has, it changes every dynamic of her life, her relationship with her spouse, her relationship with each child, and this new relationship that is occurring. And so it's really kind of an interesting, it's both life and death, and it's always filled with some amounts of grief, even though you may not see it or experience it in that way. But there is some.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've placed a baby with a family you feel good about, but still you've given them your baby. What's next? So, and you're still so young and alone. I mean, you've got family now that's helping you, but you don't have the spouse or the father of the baby that many of us would have after that beautiful spiritual birth and death experience. You go home from the hospital a couple days later? What does that look like?
Yes. So to go back to the hospital, like he didn't show up. The birth father never showed up. His parents did, and they brought. She had handmade some blankets and passed those on to the adoptive family. And I just remember too in the hospital, the nurse was, you know, or they encouraged like you holding the baby just to kind of. The baby needs that, number one, because you're the mother. But number two, it's like, it's helpful for you to spend that quality time that you do have. But mm-hmm. I really struggled with that. I didn't want to. Mm-hmm. I already felt so attached that it was like, I didn't want to have. And I mean, this may sound harsh, but like, it was easier for me to just look from a distance and like watch my mom hold him. And that was another thing. My mom showed up for the labor and delivery. And I, when she touched me, it was like, I was like, get away. Like I was, there was so much, I think, emotional. And I don't want to say, I know resentment sounds harsh, but it was like, I didn't understand why I didn't want her to touch me and to be around me. But I think it was just because I just, it was like, okay, you show up at the end, but I needed you for so much longer than this moment. Like, why did you abandon me through the whole experience? And then you're showing up and being like, I want to be this supportive, loving mother now.
Right.
As you're going through the hardest, like the delivery part, but really like, yeah. So,
and the relinquishing part, like,
yeah.
Which, so you, not to bring up or reframe it for you, but yeah. I can imagine now if you look back, I mean, here you had been abandoned. You used that word.
Yeah.
You'd abandoned me for these 8-9 months. Like,
yeah.
So why are you here now? Because I have to abandon my child and
I don't really want to do this,
right. But I know it's the right thing to do in this situation, but you didn't need to abandon me.
Right.
You could have supported me.
And I think she, and we've had this conversation, and I know like from her understanding and from what she was like counseled to do, like she really felt like she was doing the right thing at the time. And she probably wanted to do the right thing and just didn't know what to do. Yes.
I mean, hopefully she wasn't malintending.
No, not at all. I don't think
it's so complicated.
Yes, 100%. And I hold no ill will. We've had lots of healing conversations
around
this.
That was my next question, was how's it with your mom now?
Yes. And
oh, good.
We've had a lot of healing conversations around this, and she has, you know, told me like how badly she feels about how, you know, I think she handled the situation. She didn't know. She was operating from her own understanding and her own, well, the counsel she had been given. And so, there's a lot of forgiveness that's happened on my end and letting go of a lot of the things, emotions that I've held. But at the time, it was very difficult. And I remember, going back to my aunt and uncle's house in Salt Lake. And I remember her binding me up. You know, because you didn't want the milk to come in. Mm-hmm. You don't want to experience all that.
You don't have the baby to nurse.
No. Yeah. So it's like you go through the binding. And I remember, you know, her telling me about sitz baths and like going through that because I had some tearing that I had to like deal with too. And so that pain. So that was that. It was nice to have her there through that. And then, then I could come back to Kentucky finally and be with my family. But it was also really emotionally challenging to be there too, because I didn't feel like I was
part of the family. You're not the same person anymore.
No.
Yeah.
And I remember like not wanting to be alone. Like I just didn't want to be alone. I could not be alone. I couldn't be alone with myself. I couldn't be alone if someone were to leave. Like if everyone were to leave and I was alone, I was like, I don't know what to do. And so it was like, I wanted to sleep in my parents' room. I didn't care where. I just did not want to be alone. And I remember my mom has... One of her cousins he's a mental health therapist or counselor. And I remember she called him and I was around. I don't know if she knew I was listening to the conversation or not, but she was like, I don't know what to do. She just doesn't want to be alone. I don't know what's going on. Like, should I be worried? Like, should she, like, what's going on? And he's like, Dylan, she's been dealing with like abandonment. Like, why? Like, what do you expect from her? Like, how would you expect someone to act? Like, but I felt at that time too, like I have, there's something wrong with me. Like I'm off, like what's wrong with me? And so it was hard. And then they felt like, okay, well, she needs something to do, you know? So it was like, my brother was going out west to go to college for the first time at Utah Valley University. I think at the time it was UVSC. And they were like, well, why don't you go out to school and we'll get you into some housing? And I was like, okay. And I remember within a couple of weeks, like they dropped me off at this place and I had five other girl roommates and I was
the same college
supposed to enroll at UVSC.
Oh yeah.
Yep. And mm-hmm. do classes there. And I just felt like it was almost like imposter syndrome. Like, here I am with these girls who are LDS, mm-hmm. in LDS housing again, like five girls. I've just gone through this experience and I'm trying to get my bearings. I'm trying to figure out what the heck I do from here and how to act like a normal college 18 person. Year old girl. Yeah.
But you just had a very adult,
right,
real life, yeah, maturing, yeah, experience. Right. You were not on the same page as those girls. And I would imagine you're looking back at them like, that was me last year.
Yeah.
And I am not, yeah, that.
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, like, I had a roommate, you know, so it wasn't like it was shared rooms. So it wasn't like I had a private room that I could have to myself. Yeah. And
no space to, yeah, yourself. Yeah,
it was really hard. I just remember feeling at that time, it was really hard for me to relate to anyone there and really, like, yeah, feel a part of it. Like, or, yeah, just make friends. Like, it was just a struggle. It was a really big struggle.
Did you kind of learn how to, like, maybe not be authentic? Like, yeah, were you having to be this other person, mm-hmm, that you knew you weren't? And so you were, like, almost getting practice as being inauthentic.
Right. No, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely that, and just leaving yourself, you know, like, leaving yourself. I would say I had met her father when I was still out at Ricks College, and we had started dating and had been intimate because he was like, hey, she's already pregnant. This is not a possibility. And so I remember feeling like this was better to at least have some form of connection and some kind of intimacy with someone than feel abandoned and feel nothing and, mm-hmm, feel like you're worthless, even though it led to that. Mm-hmm. It still did.
Right.
It was like trying to fill. And so the same thing happened. You know, he came out, he was going to UVSC, and we got together again. And it was like, I would abandon myself and chose again to try to find love through sex with men.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not, I mean, it was, now I look back and I'm like, what did I think was going to happen? Where did I, you know, where?
You weren't thinking. You were acting on instinct. You were trying, you were searching for
hurt and shame and everything else that gets in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also after this big experience that you have, it sounds to me like you never had the therapy.
No.
And even if we roll back in time, even if you had therapy, I'm not sure the therapy would have been that great. For instance, grief. You were dealing with grief.
Right.
Grief of the loss of your innocence, your childhood.
Right.
Grief of the loss of support of your family. Grief eventually of putting this baby up for adoption. Right. Right. So you are piled and stacked with grief. And at that time, if you go back, we used to kind of all believe in this. I think it's Lisa Ann Kubler-Roth or something like this, like the five stages of grief, which, absolutely, is BS. And that's not reality.
It's not a linear process.
It's not a linear process, but they probably would have taken you through those steps. Like, mm-hmm, well, first there's denial, mm-hmm, and acceptance and, you know, all of the stages of grief that we've all heard a million times. Right. But so even if you had, I'm not sure 100% that you would have really gotten the clarity.
Right.
But I mean, looking back now with clearer eyes, mm-hmm, I mean, it's so clear that you were, yeah, well, dealing with grief.
Right.
But nobody had told you,
no,
this is grief and it takes time.
Right. Well, and you believe in, I mean, I have since learned about like energy and frequencies and things like, right, that. And, you know, everything vibrates at a different frequency. Well, the two lowest emotion, like the lowest vibrating emotions for humans, mm-hmm, the two lowest are grief and shame.
Right.
And so when you're in those, you are like at the lowest vibrating level. And so that's what you're attracting to you too. And you are not able to
get above that.
Like if you're stuck in that, it's not a good place to be. Like you are literally at the lowest on the energy spectrum. And like, here's, you know, love's obviously at the top, like, mm-hmm, love, pure love. Yeah. Happiness, joy, things like that. And so it's just, mm-hmm, like, yeah, it was a struggle. I can tell now looking back, I was absolutely operating from that place. Like I was not feeling in any way myself.
So right. what, what happened, you said you're in a relationship mm-hmm. with the person who is yes. now the father of your children that you've raised. Well, I ended up with him.
Yes, yes.
Walk us through maybe that next chapter as you're struggling to figure out who you are and what is next. You're still young, but living.
Very true.
Difficult things.
So I'm going to school, going to college, trying to do the best I can to, I think Michelle said, like, just almost pretending to be this person and like learning to not necessarily be authentically who I am. And I've kind of stuffed a lot of that down, and I'm trying to operate from a place of being normal again and being, you know, around people that are like living these. I remember roommates coming home and just talking about their boyfriends and like these experiences, but they were LDS. Like, so it was like these beautiful experiences, but I'm like, that's awesome. But I'm like, you know, and I'm trying to like be happy, but at the same time, I'm kind of angry. Cause I'm like, I lost that, you know, I want that back. Can I just go back and erase everything and start over again? And so it was hard, but I also was still not wanting to be alone. And so I think I drove my boyfriend, her father at the time, like crazy. Like, I think he was just like, why are you always wanting to be around? Like, yeah, I'm sure he felt smothered. I'm sure he felt whatever, but I was willing to do whatever it took to not be alone. So it was like, oh, you want to be intimate? Okay. I'm here for you. Like, I am down.
You're trying to fill that void.
Right. So I end up actually getting pregnant again. We're not married. We were dating, and you know, of course, having to have that conversation again was traumatizing and trigger. It was very difficult, but I had to, you know, and luckily he was like, well, we'll figure it out. And he had understood. He had been there through me placing a child. So he understood exactly what I went through. He knew that was not an option. He knew I was going to keep the baby and like do it on my own, or he could join me.
He'd be a part of it.
Yeah. But I was not going to go through that again, like ever. So he could either jump on board and be part of it or not. And I remember having to tell my parents again. And I remember my mom actually, like when we were dating and kind of a couple, my mom saying something snidely. And I feel bad because I feel like I've thrown my mom under the bus a lot in this. But at the same time, like this is just me being real. Mm-hmm, and my mom is a good person. She has an amazing heart. I love her. She has like done so much for me. But I remember her looking at me when we were talking about the guy, and she was like, you must be having sex with him if he's your boyfriend. Like, why would he want to be with you? And it hurt. Like, yeah. It cut to my core. And I just thought, okay, this
when
is
you were
exactly
already
what you
pretty
think.
Torn
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is after I had, you know, placed the baby, and I already felt bad enough. Like, I, and it was just another like blow, you know, like, you're right. I'm worthless. You're right. Why would someone really care and want to be with me? Why would? And yeah, it was painful. And I understood what she was saying. Like, why, you know, you realize you're just throwing yourself at another guy and this is probably going to happen. So it was like, yeah, it happened. And yeah. And so eventually, though, we waited till for a long, long time, like until it was to the point where we had to figure out something. And, you know, he had some conversations with his parents, and he came to the decision that he was going to marry me and help, you know, and raise the child and be there. And I remember the wedding, my mom wouldn't let me wear a white dress. She wouldn't let me get a white dress. I couldn't, because it was like, no, you can't wear white.
Because you're not pure.
Yes. So I had to get like a kind of a silvery, like kind of, I don't know, a different colored dress. And I'm grateful. I wouldn't have had probably been able to pay and afford a wedding. So they did mm-hmm. help. But it was very small. It was only like, you know, immediate family. I think her dad's side had a lot more people come and were more supportive. I think there was still a lot of shame surrounding, you know, my parents. And
so you
people.
Were pregnant now the second time when you got married.
Yeah, I was. Okay. I was 8 months. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I was definitely showing that time. So. Yep. And then we had Kaylee. She was my oldest, and we had her in July, like a month later. And then, yeah, we had three other amazing, beautiful, incredible children after that. And I think we did the best we could relationship wise, having started on kind of rocky, shaky ground.
I remember meeting him. Yeah. You guys were very attractive together. You've made beautiful children.
Well, thank you.
It's hard to say that that was like a poor choice, right? Like you look at your children and you're like, no, they're all so.
It was not a poor choice. I really feel like I needed to learn a lot of lessons in that relationship. I think he would say the same thing. And I think we all have choices, you know, and then eventually we figure out like, okay, like, you know, maybe it's time to move on and maybe we've learned what we need to from each other. And, and now it's time to take the next step. And maybe and I think for him, it was like we were at this crossroads where he wanted this kind of a life and I wanted a different kind of life. And I think we parted. I mean, I would say the divorce was messy, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been. I've seen a lot messier. Yeah. We were angry. We'd fought a lot because we were we wanted different things. I expected different things. I wanted different things. He expected things.
You were also starting to come into your own at this point.
Yeah.
You were starting to, this is when I met you. Mm-hmm. So I would say you were starting to realize that you had some power within yourself and you were starting to connect with that. And you were like in this cocoon and you were wanting to burst out of it. And you were starting to burst out of that cocoon and that relationship was not going to support it.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
So looking back, Heather, over that experience that you just shared with us, what lessons of resilience have you learned?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple mindsets, right? You can either have this victim mindset, like I'm a victim of everything, you know, like I think that there's a lot of girls that maybe do that when they find themselves pregnant, but it's like, you know, like I kind of contributed to this getting myself here. But I could have very easily been like, look, he abandoned me. You know, my family abandoned me. I'm a victim. And like just let it stop me from moving forward in any way, shape or form in my life. And the same thing with having to place a baby, getting pregnant again. You know, my ex had his own issues that I had to deal with, too. And so it's like constantly looking back and saying, I have a choice. Like I can either choose to be a victim or I can choose to be a victor and like be this person who I need to be for myself and for my children moving forward. And I think I've learned, like, I'm so grateful that I chose to be the victor in every situation. Like I never let it get me to the place where I didn't want to move forward. I mean, there were some really dark moments. And when I read the Footprints in the Sand poem, I remember feeling like that person being carried. Like there were only one set of footprints. And that was because I was truly carried through that time in my life. And I don't know how I got through it. Mm-hmm. Honestly, couldn't tell you. And so, but at the same time, like I am so grateful that I've chosen to try to see the positive. I've embraced fully like forgiveness of myself. Forgiveness of those that may not have known what they were doing or how their actions would have led to, you know, long or short term impacts that they didn't understand. So embracing forgiveness, embracing just letting go and releasing a lot of the things that I needed to.
Heather, that is really beautiful. And I love that you include forgiveness as part of resilience. I think oftentimes people want to be forgiven, but they don't offer forgiveness. And I love that you have a good relationship with your mother. Like, yeah, she said some hurtful things that you maybe would have really liked it to be different in that time, but you've been able to forgive and move on and heal that relationship. And it's now just part of your story. And I'm sure in a lot of ways your relationship is so much better today than it ever was because it's more real, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would hate for anyone to judge me at my lowest lows, you know, where I was at. Could you imagine like if anyone were to say you're in the, you know, literally from a place of yeah, some of my lowest lows and the decisions that I was making at the time were not great. And so to judge someone else and, you know, my mom or whoever it was for their actions at the time with knowing what she had gone through too, growing up and things in her life, it's easy to judge someone unless you take a look and either walked a day in their shoes or look at the whole picture. What traumas have they experienced? Mm-hmm. Where have they gone through? What they've not healed?
Yeah, forgiveness is such a beautiful gift. And when we offer forgiveness to others, we create that forgiveness within ourselves and an opening, right? It's just such a beautiful thing. Well, I want to thank you for coming in. We have another series that you're going to stick around for. Your daughter, Kiara, is here with us today. Her show will air the following week. So please come back and hear a similar story with a little different ending. And we're excited about that. In the next session, we're going to talk to you just a little bit more to start out with and talk about that your adoption was closed. Your daughter's adoption is open, but there is a transition period that her story overcrosses into yours. So we're going to come back next week and hear about that. It's really an amazing story. And I just really appreciate you coming in and being so open and vulnerable. I know that you're actually a pretty private person and you have a very small circle. And I really honor and appreciate that you would trust me with this story and sharing it here.
Well, thank you. No, I appreciate you having me on. And it's difficult to kind of share these things. But at the same time, I really hope it helps someone else. It can help someone else learn that they can, if they're going through something similar, there's help support out there. And they're never alone.
Yeah, well, thank you.
That's so beautiful and exactly what we hope comes from this show, people who are willing to share their stories that then empower those that listen. So if you're listening today, thank you for coming on this journey with us. Like Michelle said, tune in next week to get the second half of this beautiful family story. And if you're listening and have a story you're willing to share with our listeners that might help them find and develop their own tools of resilience, we would love to hear that. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. Go find it Relentlessly Resilient on Facebook and Relentlessly Resilient Podcast on Instagram. There's a quick little button you can click to talk to Michelle and do a quick phone interview to figure out what you might share and how that might help those who are listening. Find us on your favorite podcast platform and give us a like, a rating, and a review. It helps us get the show out to other people and know how we can make things even better next time around. As always, thanks to our producer, Kellyanne Halverson, and to our fabulous sponsor, Minky Couture.
And remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.